Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome inside Patriots Playbook for Tuesday, October the 9th. Yeah, today's October the 9th, right? Week 6 coming up in the National Football League season. Patriots are 3-2 after getting by Denver 31-21 on Sunday. I believe I predicted 27-20. So I was relatively within shouting distance. I didn't think it would be terribly high scoring, but then again, I didn't think it would be quite even as high scoring as it was. I thought the Patriots would win relatively comfortably. They managed to do that. It was a 31-7 game, and obviously the defense sort of relaxed. That would be one of my nitpicks today because, again, as I have stated many, 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 many times, and I will state again in case you have not heard any of the other many, 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 many times, that championship teams know how to finish. Championship teams know how to put their foot square on the jugular of an opponent and step down hard. And the Patriots have not yet learned how to do that. Now, you can certainly blame the overall, I think, youth on the defensive side of the ball for that particular predicament right now. And maybe it is something that will become a learned trait before this year is out. You can only hope for continued growth and improvement, as you hope to see, you know, every week. Some weeks there will be steps back. Other weeks there will be huge steps forward. You hope for a little more consistency and that you can see a gradual progression. And I think that even after coughing up a bit earlier, that we can see some progression defensively. But in terms of being able to shut it down, we haven't seen that yet. So, and I think partially here, gang, partially you got to give some credit to Peyton Manning. I mean, Manning continues to get better. I'm very happy that the Patriots are facing Peyton Manning now as opposed to, say, oh, I don't know, week 14 with a potential playoff berth on the line, which it might be for the Broncos. I can see that he's got more arm strength than previously thought. He actually overthrew, as you'll recall, perhaps a couple of his receivers. I think he continues to get stronger. I think what he needs to do, and I think what the Broncos will need to do from here on out, is continue to be on the same page and learn each other, learn the nuances, learn the offense. Everybody get on the same page, and that's only going to come with more time. I do think now, even though I like San Diego quite a bit, I did like Oakland. I don't like them anymore. But I do think now that Denver ends up winning this division. That's just my thought. I think Denver will probably get into the playoffs, and it would not shock me to see a 14th career meeting between Tom Brady and Peyton Manning in the postseason. It would not shock me. Fortunately for the Patriots, that meeting will be here. Should be here, unless we see something really extraordinary happen based on the regular season meeting. So, nitpick number one for me today has to be the fact that the defense has yet to learn how to put a team away. You're up 31-7, you got an entire quarter still to play, and you let Denver right back into the thing. And if it weren't for another major screw-up by, you know, Willis McGahee, that could have been 31-28 at the two-minute warning with an onside kick still to come. So take that for what it's worth. But that's my first one today. What about you? Email us, webradio@patriots.com. Email address, webradio@patriots.com. Our ACE ticket hotline, 508-298-0398. Again, that's 508-298-0398. We're lighting them up as we speak. We're going to get to everybody, so hang tight. You can hit me on Facebook, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E. If you haven't done the friend request, please do so, and then we can post and we can chat. We do all sorts of functions on the Facebook page.
Yeah, I don't know what happened, but Team Rook is all of a sudden on the phones here.
I like it. Well, people have gripes.
You didn't even have to call them out.
People have gripes, and it's legitimate. I mean, this team is 3-2. I think we all kind of figured this team would at least be 4-1 at this stage. So as far as I'm concerned, this team is still one game behind the eight ball. They're one game less than I thought they would be through 5 weeks. And because of that, hopefully somewhere they'll end up making this up. Denver was a game I expected them to win. The one game, of course, that they have not won, or they didn't win, that I didn't really think that they, or that I thought they should win, I should say, was the Arizona game. I didn't really think they'd beat Baltimore, and yet they almost did. So, at any rate, you're still a game kind of behind the eight ball a little bit. Don't forget Twitter, at JRook0722 is the Twitter address. And I thank you again for all of the followers on Twitter over the course of the last couple of weeks. Keep them coming. Keep them coming. I will not clog your inbox. I do not tweet my, you know, every other, you know, rampant thought on the Patriots during the game or even during the week. I try to give you pertinent things. I will retweet things that I see on Twitter from respected journalists that I know. Many of them you probably already follow yourself, but just in the event that you do not, if I see something I think is timely, I will send it to you or I will forward it. Retweet it, as the case may be. But I would say I average maybe 1 to 2 tweets a day. That's about it. I don't go nuts over it. So what I do send you, I feel to be fairly important. And then, of course, I also, you know, tweet on occasion about college football and college basketball because those are two of my other professions, two of my other passions. And, yes, strippers, we need to throw it down, okay? This is the week. This is the week. Kevin, I need a little fight song music at some point in time. We need a little fight song music. But this is the Red River Rivalry Week. He calls it the Red River Shootout. He's been, you know, chatting me up on Twitter, trying to goad me into arguments and, you know, what do you think is better? And he tweeted me a nice photo of Geno Smith, for West Virginia, you know, after throwing a touchdown pass on the sidelines, I think this last week. He's on the phone to the press box. He's giving the horns down sign, you know, and I'm like, oh, come on. All right. You know what? Let me say this about the game this last weekend, strippers, and then we'll move on to other items, all right? But just so you know, all right, I really honestly didn't expect them to beat West Virginia. West Virginia is an outstanding offensive football team. They may be the best college offense I've seen ever, ever. And that beat some pretty good Spurrier teams at Florida and some pretty good Urban Meyer teams, you know, honestly. Some pretty good Oregon teams of recent vintage. This West Virginia team seems to have it all. You remember the run-and-shoot Houston teams back in the late 80s and early 90s that were running up all kinds of points and yards. This may be better. And Texas really is not very strong defensively. I will be up front with you on this one, strippers. I think if Texas beats Oklahoma this Saturday at the Cotton Bowl in Dallas, I think it'll be a slight upset. I actually expect OU to probably win a close one. Doesn't mean that I ain't going to be pulling like hell for the horns because I just, you know why Texas doesn't fall in the Gulf of Mexico, right? Kevin, you know the answer to this one? I think I tell this joke every year. Why Texas does not fall into the Gulf of Mexico? Because Oklahoma sucks. Thank you very much. Of course, he would say, strippers' answer to that, and this is so predictable. His answer to that would be, you know why it's so windy in Oklahoma? Because Nebraska sucks and Texas blows. That's what he would say that. So that's okay. Anyway. All right. So that's enough of the Red River rivalry. Strippers, just, you know, all I can say is bring it, pal. But I kind of like OU in a close one if I'm going to try to be somewhat impartial. I will lose all impartiality after today. It's all over after today. I will be wearing something burnt orange in the studio every day this week after today. And the only reason I'm not wearing burnt orange today is because I just got through with a workout. So I'm wearing my gray College Football Hall of Fame shirt today. All right? So there you go. But I'll have something burnt orange for you every day the rest of the week. And Kevin will be able to verify that.
We can tweet pictures of you at him.
Can you?
Yeah, you can take a picture and tweet it right
at
him.
All right, well, then we'll do that. We'll do that. We'll do one from the studio tomorrow. We'll send a tweet tomorrow, and that'll be all good. All right, to the phones we go. Once again, webradio at patriots.com. Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. John.Rook on Facebook, at jrook0722 on Twitter. Ken in North Carolina leads us off today in the playbook. Hi, Ken.
Hey, John. How are you?
I'm excellent. How are you, sir?
I've got a big nitpick.
Go, sir.
And it's not against the team. It's probably against one of your compatriots.
Okay.
Tom Curran.
All right. And why is that?
Well, because that is against this Wes Walker thing that came up.
Oh, okay. All right.
That makes me so angry.
Well, then explain why it makes you angry. What did he say that angered you?
Not Wes.
Right. What did Tom Curran say that angered you?
Did you read his thing today?
I have not read it today.
Well, you should.
Okay, I will.
That this has to be because of Wes not getting his contract.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is BS.
Well, we have mentioned here on this show, Ken, that... Quite frankly, I think it's a load of crap, too.
There is a big load of crap. And this guy, excuse me, is trying to make a name for himself, even though he's got a name. And you know what he has done? He has embarrassed Wes Welker.
Well.
Yeah, excuse me.
Okay, go ahead.
He has put Bill Belichick in a corner. And you know what? The worst thing he has done? There are fans out here. I am one. And it just absolutely goes up my you-know-what sideways.
Okay. All right. Well, let's take a look at it for just a second, and let's see if we can't, you know, figure out something that we can come to a common ground on. Number one, what Wes said, we know that Wes likes to tweak the nose of... all kinds of people in the clubhouse. He's done that. He did that against Rex Ryan a couple of years ago, the whole foot fetish thing, and he got punished for that. So yeah. Wes is...
You know, and that was something different.
Yeah, but at the same time...
That was a man and his wife.
Okay, but at the same time, the reason he was punished was because, A, it took away from play on the field, which is something that the Patriots don't like their players to do, to do, number one. And number two... It really wasn't what I would call professional. Say what you want to. I mean,
let me give you a third.
All right.
On this.
Go ahead.
I really enjoy Wes Welker's sense of humor.
Okay.
We're never going to see that again.
Well, that's probably
Nobody
true.
Nobody will ever. He's never going to say anything to any. Excuse me, journalist, again, for one reason.
Because he gets...
some backfire.
Okay. Let me say this, though, Ken. I actually think this is who Wes is. And I think Wes does like to thumb his nose at the establishment, so to speak.
Of course he does.
And because of that, I don't think he's going to stop being Wes. I think the team and the coaches all realize that Wes is still Wes. Yes. This will probably enter into the discussion of the offseason as to whether or not they want to bring him back. But I don't think they're bringing him back anyway, and I've maintained that from day one.
Well, I hope they do.
Well, I do, too. As a fan, I hope they do.
His performance this year, I hope they do.
I would agree with you.
What really angers me is that, you know, somebody has made this big deal. You know what? If I were Wes Welker, instead of saying, I love to stick it in Bill's face, he should have said, I love it. To stick it in the media thing.
He probably will from now on. I mean,
and you know what? That would have been never, ever shown on TV.
Well, let me also suggest to you that the reason that Tom Curran might have written about it was because his comments actually occurred on CSNNE television. So because it happened on his cable network, that he might have actually been told by somebody to write about it. And give his opinion on it.
Had he said media, guess what? We never would have seen it. would we?
Well,
never.
I don't know. I mean, honestly, I can understand why, you know, Mike Felger or anybody is at CSNNE. I can understand why they would have raised an eyebrow if he had
Mike
said that.
Felger. What? I mean, I don't like the guy.
Well, you would have to stand in a long line on that one. Okay. You know what? Here's what you can do, Kent. You cannot watch them or you cannot read their work. So clearly you read Tom Curran's work because you're telling me about it today.
Yeah, me and I have CSNNE on my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I have deleted.
Okay, fair enough.
CSNNE.
That is your right as a fan. All I can tell you is that he was probably told, and again, I'm just surmising just because I know how Simon editors react in this business, and I'm probably saying, hey, you know, we could use some kind of an opinion piece on that.
Use this, and I'll tell you what. We can make a jerk out of him. We can paint Bill Belichick into a corner. I think that is, and the worst thing is the fans. I like to hear about how people think after a football game.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. I want to know. Now, this fella came off. He had a great game. Number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, he's got all kinds of things going through him. He's feeling happy. He's feeling great on a team that was originally told that they're going to beat you.
Yeah. Now,
I don't think anybody believes that in professional football.
Okay.
But he did a great, great, great job. And you know what? The media put it to him.
Well, the media does have a tendency to kind of take things out of context from time to time, and the media does have a tendency, I think.
Contact, but I will say one thing. And he deleted Bill and put media in there, we never would have seen this.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Serious.
I would tell you this. I do believe, and Ken, thanks for the phone call. I do tell you this, that I really believe that had he said media as opposed to Bill, that it would have gotten some play, but not as much play. Because Wes, this is why Wes is a frequent guest, because Wes is capable of saying things like this. And this is, I mean, because as you well know, information coming out of here, coming out of Gillette Stadium, is sometimes very, very difficult to come by. And because of that fact, when a player does step up and say something, it's going to make bigger news than it probably should. So there really should be a happier medium between what comes out and what's reported and what already does not. But this is just the way Belichick and this, you know, program have been for, you know, the 12, 13 years that he's been here now. And this is why he reacts the way he does, which is basically not at all to any sort of media reports about, hey, such and such player said this about you or said this about the team. And Bill's reaction is always, well, I don't know anything about it. You'll have to ask them. And that's what he said in this instance. I don't know anything about it. You'll have to ask them. He does not deal with it and moves on. I understand why Bill does that. I do. I get it. But the players should be allowed to have some sort of individualism. Wes is the one taking advantage of that. And I frankly think that Wes feels like, you know what, I got really nothing to lose here. And this is why I believe he's not coming back, guys. This is why I really believe it. Because he's looking at it like, well, you know what, I'm putting up numbers because I have to. I'm putting my numbers up again. This team needs me right now. I still want to win because it'll only help me in the free agent market. And I'm not coming back anyway. And they've pretty much already said as much. So what do I have to lose if I take a shot at someone like Bill? Nothing. He has nothing to lose. He's under contract for $9.5 million this year. They're not going to franchise him for 11.5 next year. That ain't happening. Now, I hope, like you and every other Patriots fan, they figure out a way to work out some kind of a long-term deal. But they've already locked in Gronk and Hernandez, okay? It's already happened with those two. This team is moving a different direction on offense. We've talked about it already this year, and we'll continue to talk about it. But because Hernandez is hurt, what have they done? They've done exactly what we've screamed at them to do after the Arizona game. Be flexible. Be able to adjust. Go back to what you know works. And dial up number 83. And that's exactly what the Patriots have done. And they've won two in a row with it. Kyle in Connecticut. Thanks for hanging on, Kyle. You're in the playbook.
Hey, John. How's it going?
Great, Kyle.
My thoughts on the game were, what do you think of Stephen Ridley's play? I know he had like 150 yards rushing, I think a touchdown. But that fumble at the end really killed his.
Yeah, well, you notice
it's been a career day.
Yeah, you know that he noticed he didn't get back in there after he lost the ball. You know, he was really forthcoming about that after the game too, and said, you know, hey, I screwed up. I got to do a better job. I got to go back to work and fix whatever problems. You know, on the play that was a fumble, he was already on his back when the ball basically squirted free. I guess you had to look at it very closely. It looked like the ball was being dislodged right before he hit the ground. So just, that made him an open target. His body was open, in other words, to the defender who raked his hands across the front and the ball squirted free. That's a very, very tough thing for any person. I don't really blame Ridley for that particular fumble because as I looked at the videotape of it again, your first instinct is to protect yourself as you're going down. I mean, that's a human instinct. And so as you're going down back first, you're already going to be off balance. And so you're trying to cushion your fall. And as you cushion your fall, it opens up your arms just a little bit. And all somebody had to do is come across and punch at the ball. That's basically what happened. So that could have happened to anybody. I don't know any ball protection drill that's going to keep you from not doing that. I've seen a million. Okay, not a million, but dozens, I'm over-exaggerating, dozens of ball protection drills and football practices. The years that I've covered football, I've seen guys get hit with everything, and literally with frying pans, just about, okay? Literally. You know, hard objects that will poke the ball out from your hands and slap down at you and get hammered, and just so you learn to hang on and protect the ball, I'm telling you, there's not a drill out there that can protect the ball the way that Ridley had it stripped. So does it take a little away from the 151? Yeah, it's still a career day, but it does take away slightly. Fortunately, the team won the game, and fortunately it ended up not really costing them a great deal because the win is all that really is going to be remembered. But I can guarantee you Stephen Ridley will probably pay for it in some form or fashion in practice this week.
Yeah, I can imagine. Also, one other thing, I was hoping to get your thoughts on the fall of the Jets. I'll take your answer off the air. Thanks.
All right, Kyle. Thanks for the phone call. I actually thought the Jets put up a pretty good fight last night. I was one of those that kind of thought Houston might wipe the floor with them. And frankly, I would not have been sick if that had happened. I think as most Patriots fans probably feel. But what we saw last night was, you know, two things. Number one, the Jets aren't as bad as the previous 2 weeks, or certainly the previous week against San Francisco indicated. They're not. They're still formidable, even though they're missing arguably their two best players. In Holmes and Revis, offense and defense, right? They're still going to be competitive. Houston, for all of the plaudits that they're being, having thrown at them by almost every ESPN, you know, talking head I've seen, Herm Edwards basically vomited all over him today, and just, you know, because he was, you know, I mean, come on. It's week five. We're ready to anoint them. We're ready to give them the Super Bowl. We have how many more weeks to play? 11? I thought it was a little ridiculous. Are they the best team in the AFC right now? Record-wise, they sure are. But are they the best team? I don't know that we can really make a judgment. I realize that the talking heads on television, because I've obviously been one before, but I realize that they're there to do exactly what they're doing. They're going to be asked questions, hey, get off the fence, make a pick, who's the best? And they're going to tell you in their best estimation what they feel like, you know, or who they feel like is the best team. Even though smart people are going to tell you, we're not really going to know the best team until we get past the midway point of the season. Once we get to the midway point of the season, you pretty much have a good idea who you are, what you are, and where you might be going. The only thing that's going to change it is if you get somebody back significantly through injury or what have you, and then you get on a bit of a roll. So I would tell you that even the team that you see at midseason may not be the team that you have in December. Because this is all about momentum and who's playing well late in the year for the most part. For the most part. Not every time, but for the most part. So if you want to crown Houston the Week 5 champion, cue Dennis Green.
If you want to crown them, then crown their ass.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Coach Green. Exactly. You want to crown them, crown their ass. It's exactly right. But it doesn't mean squat. Does not mean squat. So, you know, Houston, they struggled a little bit last night. They've got a devastating ground game. They could be a little bit better in the passing game. I'm still not sold on Matt Schaub. I'm not sold. We talked about this last week as one of our questions of whether or not he was an elite quarterback or not. I don't think he's in the top five by any stretch. He might be top 10. I don't think he's top five. If they lose Matt Schaub, just like the Patriots lose Tom Brady, good night. And they've lost in the last couple of years. So let's get through week 8, and then we'll revisit this. Well, believe me, once we get to the bye week, we'll do mid-season stuff and best team in the league right now, the team you fear the most, yada yada. We're going to get into all of that here on the show. And believe me, we'll revisit the Houston phenomenon coming up in a few weeks. Here's Eldridge in North Carolina. Eldridge, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Good today, pal. How are you?
All right, man. I've been listening. Love your show.
Thanks, man.
And I'm like you. I'm nitpicking about the defense, man.
Go.
So I'm looking like, okay, Bill, I've seen the Cleveland 95, you know, NFL life, you know, what they do on NFL Network.
Yeah.
I've seen that how you evaluate players. But, man, we let Webb get away from us, the cornerbacks from the Ravens. We didn't pick up Jenkins this year. And you see how Jenkins played last week, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we got some corners, man, that's standing flat-footed. I mean, you see wide receiver coming off the line, and they're still standing flat-footed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering who the devil's the damn – who's the coach is. I mean, basic. You backpedal, basically. You know, that should be your first read.
Yeah.
But they're standing flat-footed and getting burnt. And as far as us going deep, if the subject keeps playing like he's playing, I don't know, man. I don't know. McCourty – He shows up sometimes, he disappears. Moore is getting burnt more like McCourty did last year,
mm-hmm.
You know. And then Wilson, Tavon Wilson, I love the way that kid play. I love the way he's instinctive. He can cover a little bit. But Gregory and my man, number 25, I keep wondering about you.
Patrick
Chung? We got burnt. Yeah, Patrick Chung. They got burnt in the middle where they shouldn't have been. You know what I mean? It shouldn't have been.
Yep.
Against Denver.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you got deep middle. Then they're coming deep. It's you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just don't get it either. You know.
Well.
Evaluating our secondary.
Yeah, I think the safeties have struggled a little bit over the last couple of weeks. I think Kyle Arrington actually acquitted of himself fairly well this last week. Even though Devin McCourty had a pass interference early in the game, I don't think he had a horrible game overall. So while I think the cornerback play at least seems to be stabilizing somewhat, if not getting at least a little more consistent, the safety play has lacked a little bit over the last 2 weeks. Now, I would grant you that I think part of that may be because they're concerned with run support, but, I need to look at him a little bit further because I think we all know that Patrick Chung can play. So, and I think Tavon Wilson is absolutely going to be a keeper. There's no question in my mind. I see NFL starter on him maybe in fairly short order. So, I think it's going to continue to improve. Maybe this is just a little hiccup. And I kind of tend to believe that, what we've seen the last few weeks may not be what we see for the remainder of the year.
Yeah, we'll see, according to him, he almost cost us a game with Denver with that pass interference. He cost us one with the Ravens, and he cost us one with the Cardinals because he helped him out. You know
mm-hmm,
what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Both times we lost,
mm-hmm.
You know. And if you're an NFL, you've been there 3 years now, you know, you should, like I said, you're professional. You're getting paid to do your job.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, getting your job is not getting turned around like that. But like I said, our biggest concern is fast receivers or big receivers. Our corners don't match up.
Okay.
Don't match up.
Okay.
You know, And that's what this one thing keeps bugging me. And the other thing about Welcher, yeah, I agree with him. I agree with you too, John. I think this is his last year with us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I wish they keep him because even though he's 5'2",
yeah,
he does get old. I'm just joking about the 5'2".
Oh, I'm sure he would laugh at that one too. But you know what? That's fine because that makes him hard to defend. He gets into the cracks and the creases and the crevices that other receivers can't get into. And we saw that early. I mean, you know, Denver had no shot at stopping Welker early in the game. No shot.
No shot whatsoever. But see, if Bill and if Bill thinking that, okay, we're going with tight ends, but like I said, is it me or is it just the way I'm thinking? We paid Grunk and Hernandez, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Last year they was balling, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they got paid and both of them hurt. It makes me wonder sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, you pay them this year, all of a sudden both of them hurt, you know. And
I realize that the problem is that you have to have somebody to play if the guys you're paying are hurt, but you can't pay everybody the big bucks, and they've decided to invest the money in the guys who probably have a longer shelf life than Wes does now.
Yeah, but then again, like I'm with you, it sure gets a help to Western too. You know, I know we got Lloyd, but to me, man, Lloyd ain't playing. Like he's supposed to be playing. Like I said, I remember him in Denver.
Well,
St. Louis.
Okay.
But the one thing that comes to my mind about Lloyd is when Lloyd was with the 49ers and they had Owens and hit my man Rice, and Lloyd was back there, he wasn't the man. He made a couple catches, but he wasn't the man. And he sort of like backed off a little bit until he went away to become the man somewhere else. Then he started balling. And that's what I think the problem is here.
Well, I think he's doing, Eldridge, I would disagree with you respectfully only because I think he's doing what they're asking him to do. They're not really interested in him right now in deep balls, even though they've tried it a few times. But on Ridley's touchdown run in the second half, an 8-yard run, he laid a devastating block. And it was something that, you know, some receivers don't get out and do. But I would tell you that I think that what Brandon Lloyd is doing is he's doing the things above and beyond what he's being asked to do that tell this team that he's a player and that he's worth keeping around.
Okay. But like I said, Hernandez hurt, Gronk hurt. We're going to get Seattle this weekend. Number one defense, and they got 6'2", 6'3" corners.
Well,
run, cover, and hit.
Don't be surprised. Don't be surprised if Hernandez comes back this week. I will make a prediction and say Hernandez plays. I don't know how much, but I say he gets on the field. At least he'll be active.
Yeah, but he won't be 100% yet, though.
They won't let him out there unless he can play and do everything they want him to do. They won't put him out there unless he can cut and do everything they want him to do.
Okay. All right, John. You have a good one, man.
Thanks, Eldridge. You got it, buddy. Ricky in Mobile, Alabama. Ricky, you're in the playbook.
Hey. I got a couple things to talk about.
Go.
All right. My one thing about the Patriots, why they won't blow people out like they can. It's like some games they play, they just score. Then when fourth quarter comes, they just stop trying to score. To be for real, besides the fumble, Patriots could have really blew the Broncos out.
Well, yeah, they could have, but I don't think it was so much the offense as it was the defense. I mean, it was 31-7 going into the fourth quarter. Probably should have stayed that way, but I tend to give more of the credit to Peyton Manning and Denver's offense, which is going to continue to improve. As I said earlier, it's only going to get better throughout this season. More and more that those guys get on the same page with each other. I'm very happy we faced them in week 5 as opposed to say week 13 or 14.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give some credit to Denver, but my opening nitpick had to be, this defense has got to learn to get a killer instinct. Otherwise, they're going to get killed themselves.
The reason why I love my defense, though, even though we give out a lot of yards, but when they really need a critical stop, they do it and they get it. And sometimes the offense is just like their best is they ain't trying to attack the, with they like West Walker. Can't nobody really stop West Walker. It's like they don't attack the defense. Then they just try to slow the time out. Then when they slow the time up, that's when the running game go wrong. They fumble or fourth down. They can't complete a fourth down, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they just freeze. But I feel like every year when the Patriots really want to they could score 50 some points if they really want to.
That's,
a lot of teams can't do that.
That's true. That's true. But you know, they also manage the clock a little bit more. In fact, they managed it greatly against Denver. I think they held the ball for like 36 minutes, 35, yeah, almost 36 minutes, and you know, running the no huddle. And what they did in effect was keep the ball out of Peyton Manning's hands. So that helps the defense. And that's what Denver was allowing them to do, much like we saw what Buffalo did. Denver allowed them to run the ball like that because Denver just, they were saying, all right, we still don't think you can run the ball. So we're going to put 5 and 6 DBs back there. We're going to play off the line of scrimmage a little bit. We're going to see if you can run it. And the Patriots have. Now teams are going to have to adjust a little more seriously considering the Patriots are averaging 250 yards a game on the ground over the last 2 weeks. So if they can continue to do that, teams are going to have to come up and play in the box. And this is where then you'll see them take a shot downfield with Brandon Lloyd, or they'll find Gronk up the seam, or they'll open up Hernandez, or they've got so many options. This is what's going to make the Patriots potentially devastating on offense, just because teams now are going to have to respect the run because of the job that Ridley and Bolden have both done for the most part. And hey, I got to give some props here to Danny Woodhead, who picked up a 3rd and 14. Or actually, no, he picked up a 3rd and 17 by gaining 18 yards on a run. Good God almighty. I don't think anybody ever expected that. Certainly the Broncos didn't, and he got it. So there are three guys in that backfield that can get you a first down when they need it. You know who that reminded me of? When he picked up that 18 yards in that 3rd and 17, I said, oh, my God, it's Kevin Faulk all over again.
Yeah, that's all Danny Wood. Danny Wood is more of an old school, to me, old school runner.
Yeah.
Get it when he really needs it.
Yeah.
A lot of people be doubting him. But if it weren't for that holding call against Cardinals, Danny Woodhead would have won us the game.
Yeah. Hey, Ricky, you know what? You're right. You're right. I do agree. And that, we, as we know, is an extremely questionable call. But hey, you know what? We move on. It is what it is.
It is. I mean, this is another thing too. By me looking at our team now, we're really gonna win the Super Bowl. Because when you think about it, when we have a good running game during the season, we do some good. We do some damages.
Mm-hmm.
And like, to me, even last year, really, when people did blitz us, really still be break. He still will break for 10, 15 yards. They'll take him out the game. Mm-hmm. That he has a little fumbling trouble. But if I feel like if he would play in the Super Bowl, play well in the Super Bowl, the Super Bowl came out different. When Patriots have a running game and they can't stop it, then they do stop it. They can't stop our pass the game. So no matter what, our offense is a main threat. Then like Brandon Spice, how he hit on defense at a critical time.
Yeah.
I don't see the 49ers. To be honest, I don't see the 49ers or the Texans beating us.
Well, I don't know that the 40. I think the 49ers right now to me would be the biggest threat. They seem to have the most complete team from top to bottom. But let me tell you, that's based on a limited experience to them that I have thus far in watching some of their games. And again, we're only 5 weeks through the season, so I don't know that we know really who San Francisco is yet. We don't know who Houston is yet. I mean, we probably have a little better idea on who, say, like Baltimore is because we played Baltimore.
Yeah.
So we probably have a relatively good idea how the Giants are, just because we've had some experience with the Giants in the last few years.
Yeah.
But I think there are some other teams in the NFC that will still probably be worth looking at. One of them may be Green Bay, although they're struggling right now. I'm anxious to see what the Seattle team really looks like on defense. Numbers wise, it says that they're great, but have they been tested is what I want to know. They certainly have not seen an offense that can stretch them to their limits like what they're going to see this Sunday. One of their biggest players that I'm looking forward to watching is Bruce Irvin, the rookie from West Virginia, who I covered in college football for the last few years. And everybody thought that it was a real stretch to take him in the first round. And hey, dude's already putting up numbers.
He paid off.
You'd have to say that he is. So he's very active. The Patriots offensive line will have their hands full with him.
Yeah, they will. I got two more things. I'm going to let you go.
Go.
The reason why I say it would beat the 49ers. Yes, their defense is will be our problem. But if we could control their offense, that the offense is like they really can't really score over 30 points.
Mm-hmm.
And our offense can't do that. If we can score, I feel like if we can score 28 points on the 49ers, we can win that game because their offense can be controlled.
Well, I hope you're right.
Another thing is, I feel like I feel like the Vikings are going to upset the NFC and go end up going to the Super Bowl.
The Vikings?
I feel that.
Okay. Based on what? Based on what? What have you seen about the Vikings thus far that make you think that?
From last year to this year, that's a totally different team. Chris Ponder, like Alex Smith, last year he became a game manager. They ain't turning the ball over. Preston Harvey, they ain't stopping them, and that defense is just crazy.
Okay.
It's just crazy. By them beating the 49ers, by them showing me they can beat the 49ers, I feel like they can if they can get into the playoff. They might do what the New York Giants did and sneak up in the Super Bowl.
All right, fair enough. We'll hold you to that, Ricky. Thanks, man, for the phone call. All right, we got our WEI Whiner Line star, Big Al from Valdosta, Georgia. You. I feel betrayed, Al. I really feel betrayed today.
You think I'm cheating on you, John?
Yeah, you are cheating on me. You're cheating on me with another radio outlet.
Well, I'll just tell you that, you know, like I've told everybody else that's accused me of that, and that is that, you know, it's just hard for me to not want to share the love, you know, across the board.
Yeah, spoken like a true man who's sitting on the driveway, you know, with his crap out there with him. He's been kicked out of his house.
Just because, you know, I mean, just because I listen to this show doesn't mean I'm why should I deny the love, you know, to the other show at the same time.
Yeah. That's, yeah. But, see, now every woman that's listening is going to go, Rook, kick his ass out.
Well, come on. I think the women that listen to sports talk, you know, they kind of, you know, they're flexible. But anyways, listen, I really love Sunday. I think this is really, you know, you don't see a lot of no huddle where you run the ball.
Yeah.
Usually you see no huddle where it's the K gun or it's, you know, we're whipping the ball around every play because we want to keep the run defense on the field and throw against it.
Mm-hmm.
This is where we're keeping the pass defense on the field and we're running against it, you know, and it's kind of the backwards way to do it, but it's worked out great. And, you know, to me, as long as you don't wear out or beat up your offensive linemen too bad doing that, I think it'd be a great thing to stick with. Maybe you can't do it every game, but against certain opponents, why not?
All right, I want to kind of pick this apart a little bit, not to go up against you, but make your statement again, one more time.
Well, like I say, the no huddle is normally a pass situation,
right?
Where you're the offense and you're trying to trap a run defense on the field where they can't substitute,
right? But
and you're going to continue to pass against it, and you think you can make your passing game work against a run defense.
But
we're playing Denver. They played a lot of you know, pass defenses against us, even on 1st and 10, they're throwing out all these defensive backs,
right?
And we're just running them out of it.
Well,
we're not just running them out of it, you know, and huddling up. We're doing it on the run,
so,
running them out.
All
of
right,
it,
so
to keep them in the damn thing. That's what I'm saying.
Wait a second. You think that? All right, because I wanted to make sure I got this right. You're saying then that by running the no huddle, it kept Denver in the game?
It kept Denver's pass defense on the field.
Well, exactly.
And
exactly.
And we're running against it.
Yeah, all right.
And we're not giving them a chance to substitute.
Right.
It's the same as the K-gun. It's just the opposite.
Right.
I mean,
then
keep the defense in the wrong defense, but just the opposite wrong defense.
Yeah, Al, we said that here last week. We said that the best way, I think, to do this is to not allow Denver to substitute their sub-packages in the game defensively. So that way it would favor you in a matchup. And so they're keeping their, you know, pass sub-package in the game. The Patriots are still going to run no huddle. And they're going to run out of the no huddle. And that's what makes, you know, their offense that much more devastating than it has been in the past, because it's a running offense that now must be respected. So you can run no huddle and still run the ball, and you're just not going to allow your opponent a chance to get their favorable matchups into the game, and you're going to be playing into a mismatch the entire time.
Exactly.
This gives the Patriots an advantage.
Absolutely.
Denver really liked to sub-package or to substitute their different packages in. We said here last week, one of the keys to the victory would be not allowing Denver to do what they want to do. And the right. Patriots were able to do that. And you can expect to see more of that from future opponents if opponents really like to game plan and manage that. The Patriots want you to beat them man up. Beat us with your base.
Yep.
And the Patriots are also saying, though, Al, that we don't think you can beat us with your base.
Yep. I mean, we're in agreement, John. I'm just saying haven't seen a lot of other teams run out of the no huddle before. I just haven't seen other teams do it or us do it in the past. I think it's unusual out of the no huddle.
Because
you normally pass out of it. But I think it's good. I think it worked very well. And I'm not sure, again, that you could do it every week because you might beat up your offensive linemen a little bit and you want to, you know, keep them healthy and whatever. But against certain teams, you know, in certain situations and certain games, you can go to it. And
sure.
I thought it was very effective. The only nitpick I have is, and this is my usual nitpick, you know, about the usual subject that I nitpick about.
Okay.
And that's clock management in the fourth quarter. You know, and it's, you know, this is where the baseball conversation, I guess, differs from the football conversation, because this is more of like a baseball thing. We had a guy on second and there was nobody out, and why didn't we bunt him over to third? And, you know, that's how you talk about baseball a lot. You know, in football, we tend to talk about positions. You know, we're a little weak at this position. Why don't we plus up at linebacker? Where's our left tackle going to come? You know, that type of thing. We talk about positions a lot and not so much the clock management or tactics or whatever, but it's just something that I pay attention to for better or for worse. And look, we had them up 17 points. There was 8 minutes and 22 seconds to go in the game.
Mm-hmm.
We had a third and five and they're around their 35, 36 yard line, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
Denver takes a timeout. All right. What do you do? And what I'm saying again is, in that situation, kind of like in the Baltimore game, a less extreme example of it, but, you know, if you've determined during the timeout that this is a two-down situation and you're not going to kick a field goal, which makes perfect sense, really getting from 17 to 20 points is not a big difference. You know, three touchdowns still beats you either way. So you want to take the field goal out of the equation. Fine. We're in two down territory, and we determine that during the timeout that Denver has taken.
Right.
Okay, fine. Now, so far so good. Here's the problem. You know, the first play on third and five, Brady throws, it's nearly an interception. We should have run the ball. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's not a second game. You run the ball in that situation. Not only do you avoid nearly getting intercepted, which is one thing, but you run the ball, you start the clock again. You force the opponent again to make a decision. Are we going to burn that second timeout, or are we going to let the clock tick down? In which case, depending on what happened on third and five, if you end up third and four and you feel like you're going to punt, you can just have your punter stand there and watch the clock tick down. Mm-hmm. If he takes a delay of game, so what? Probably helps him, backs him up 5 yards, gives him a better angle. You know, or if that is not what happening, the opponent has to take the second timeout to stop the clock.
Okay.
So either one of those outcomes, again, is a good outcome. Either you force Denver to take the second timeout, or you let the clock run down while you're in punt formation.
Okay.
I mean, either one of those is fine. But we didn't end up with either one of those because we chose to pass twice. And we almost had either a pick six, or if not, a fumble six, because Brady is getting knocked around midfield and they end up, you know, four plays later or whatever, they're in the end zone. And instead of being a 17-point lead where they've got the ball on their own 10, it's a 7-point lead, and they're kicking off in a matter of a couple of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that was poorly handled, John. And I'm sorry. I know that sounds like one of these baseball conversations where why didn't you, you know, double steal or whatever. But I just think those are important in football, too. Particularly in the fourth quarter, 5 to 10 minutes to go, you know, 2 to 5 minutes to go. These situations, I just don't think we're handling them very well. We'd be undefeated now at 5-0. I think if we had managed the clocks better, a clock better, and the situation better in both of the losses. So we just got to watch that. I think that's something that has to be improved. And I don't know where the issue lies. You know, I don't know. They don't pay me enough to know how these decisions get made. But I'm just looking at the results, And, you know, it's just going to be my nitpick every week as long as it as long as it keeps happening.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you make some good points. You do. I wished I could crawl into their heads to figure out why they made the decisions that they did.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that I can. Let's see if something similar comes up in the next couple of weeks, and then you and I will have to revisit. And then we'll, and maybe we can kind of figure out and see if we can find a tendency here. But frankly, yeah. I think that they just feel like, you know, well, based on what the coverages were and what they're showing us, that was our best guess at the time. Obviously, you know, and you can hear Bill almost say it, we got to do a better job of execution.
Well, yeah. And, you know, I guess there's a tendency to think, look, we've got the world's greatest quarterback. The ball in his hands, we feel good about, you know, and I understand that. But, you know, at the same time, I mean, there's ways to use the rule book and the clock, you know, to your favor. You know, John Madden only won one Super Bowl, and he was probably lucky to win that, because if not for Ben Dreyf, you know, look up your Patriot history there. If not for Ben Dreyf, he might not have won that.
Yeah.
So, you know, but he was always good with Ken Stabler at, you know, maximizing the last 2-3 minutes of a game, running out the clock if they had the lead. I mean, the whole, you know, tic-tac-toe of the last 5 minutes or plus or minus of a ball game, they had that down. And I don't know if it just, we just seem to struggle with that, closing out these games.
Well,
and I just hope it's something, I don't know what the magic formula is, but we got to have like a weekend seminar during the bye week with John Madden. Bring John Madden in on the bus,
couldn't
you know,
hurt.
During the bye week.
Couldn't hurt.
And just have him sit down and just have a little 3-day weekend or something.
Couldn't
what do you
hurt.
Think?
I think that would be an excellent idea. I think he'd probably love to do that, too.
He probably would. All right, John, have a great one, man. I'll call you next week.
Thanks, Big Al. Appreciate that. Al in Valdosta, Georgia. And it's time for you. Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. What are your nitpicks? What are the problems that you have? We're going to get to some emails. We're going to get to our Facebook posts. Got a couple of tweets that we'll share with you as well. Webradio at patriots.com, John.Rook on Facebook, at JRook0722 on Twitter. Nitpick Tuesday. Find the things that need improving. Give me the things that you just, why did they do? This is why we do it. Let's set it straight. Nitpick Tuesday. We continue with Hour 2 coming up.
Sullivan Tire and Auto Repair is teaming up with Bridgestone Tires for an offer that's going to make you and your family very excited. Now through September 30th, when you buy 4 select Bridgestone Tires at Sullivan Tire, you could receive a $70 American Express gift card or your very own Wii gaming system the whole family will love. See SullivanTire.com. Offer valid August 27th through September 30th, 2012. Mail-in claim form required. Cards issued by American Express Prepaid Card Management Corporation. Wii systems given away on behalf of Bridgestone America. Nintendo is not affiliated with this promotion. Certain limitations apply.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics and Bruins tickets to all games, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
My name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then, I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the red zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call Star NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochet. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Story Time every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Verizon Fios is America's fastest internet. How fast is that? Faster than Patriots linebacker Gerard Mayo can take down a quarterback, a running back, tight end, or an offensive lineman who just got in the way. In fact, Verizon Fios internet is more than twice as fast as anything you've ever seen. And that means Patriots scores, videos, highlights, and more right when you want them. Fios is built to support multiple devices simultaneously with a constant stream of your favorite Patriots content. And that means you get Gerard Mayo's sacks at Gerard Mayo's speed.
Now that's fast.
Welcome to a world of football where and when you want it. Welcome to Life on Fios, proud sponsor of the New England Patriots. Fios available in select areas. Internet speeds are the 300 down and 65 up megabits per second available.
What would make your life better? Start with better banking from Sovereign Bank. More than a checking account, better banking is a package of financial solutions with preferred rates, debit card cash rewards, and online banking with bill pay, along with the flexible options you need to help make your everyday a little easier to manage. And now Sovereign is part of Santander, one of the strongest, safest, and most successful banks in the world. That's what we call better banking. Sovereign Bank, member FDIC.
This is Rob Gronkowski. I get lots of mail from fans asking me how they can be more like me, Gronk. It's easy. First, just head down to Dunkin' Donuts and pick up a freshly made bakery sandwich. Second, get a sweet nickname. Third, bench press 225 pounds 28 times. That's it. You're just like me, Gronk. Now hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab a bakery sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'.
Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots, LLC.
Continue to bear with me because I'm still going to be mourning this because I can't believe this is happening. I never would have thought I would be saying that I would retire from football.
Brady calling signals on first and goal at the Carolina 3, less than a minute and 40 to go. Hand off to Kevin Falk. He races into the end zone untouched.
Well, everybody that came out and everybody that cheered, man, continue supporting New England Patriots football, man, because I surely will.
Inside handoff, Kevin Falk at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown, Kevin Falk.
Boy, I'll tell
you. He's so good. He's so good, Geno.
I just like to say thank you once again, fellas and ladies, for coming out and just for the support, man. Love New England Patriots football, and thank y'all once again.
Kevin Falk on his retirement earlier today, the ceremony held officially at the Hall of Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon earlier today. And Kevin Falk, 35
presented
years old.
Presented by Raytheon.
Presented by Raytheon. He, as you all know, filling various roles since joining the team in 99. How about that? He was really the only throwback to the 20th century left on this team. Second-round pick out of LSU, 46th overall. Patriots all-time leader in all-purpose yards, more than 12,000. Kickoff return yards, almost 4,100. He's the Patriots' all-time leading return specialist, more than 5,000 combined return yards. The number is 4,098 kick return yards and 943 punt return yards. He is fifth in Patriots' history in rushing yards overall, 3,600. Fifth in receptions with 431 receptions. 11th in pass receiving yards for more than 3,700 yards. Sixth in total punt return yards, as I said. He recorded the longest non-touchdown kickoff return in team history, 95 yards on return against the Jets back in 99. For his career, He played in 161 games. 3,600 yards, as I mentioned, on the ground. 4.2-yard average, 16 touchdowns rushing. Returned 182 kicks, 101 punts. All-time leader for the Patriots in receptions by a running back. He's just the 26th running back in NFL history to reach the 400-reception plateau. In the decade of the 2000s, he was one of just six players to rush for more than 3,000 yards and gain over 3,000 yards receiving. And listen to the group that he is with in that group of six. Tiki Barber, Marshall Faulk, Michael Pittman, LaDainian Tomlinson, Brian Westbrook. Pretty good group, wouldn't you say? Kudos to Kevin Faulk for an unbelievable career. He will forever be known as, I think, the first Mr. Patriot, certainly joined by Troy Brown in that category. And I don't think there's any doubt that someday Kevin Faulk will be in the Patriot Place Hall of Fame as well. Stephen Ridley tweeted this just a short while ago. He said, shout out to my uncle Kevin Faulk as he announced his retirement today. Thanks for setting the bar so high as a Patriot like you did for me at LSU. Words can't begin to explain how much respect I have for this man on and off the field, so let's all take time to give props where props is due. Okay, sort of a malapropism, but nevertheless, we understand what Stephen Ridley is saying, and I think we all share his sentiment. We thank Kevin Faulk for just about everything and anything, but mostly everything that he has done as a Patriot since 1999. 508-298-0398, the Ace Ticket Hotline, webradio@patriots.com is the email address. John.Rook on Facebook, @JRook0722 on Twitter. Do you have any particular Kevin Faulk memories? We're going to still get to the nitpicks. Don't forget, I got a bunch of nitpicks you're going to get to. Email, Facebook, we're going to get to them. But I would also add, in addition to your regular Tuesday nitpicks here about the things that you would like to have seen go better following Sunday's win, I would also ask you, at least in this hour, share a favorite Kevin Faulk moment. Let's see what comes about. If you have a favorite Kevin Faulk moment that really jumps out at you, would you be so kind as to share it? webradio@patriots.com, or just pick up the phone, 508-298-0398, and I'll get you right in. You can also send it up on Facebook. All right. This one comes from William via email. It says, John, I'm writing early. He actually wrote this one yesterday afternoon. So he says, I'm writing early, but I know what some people will call nits. I'm here to mention the truth. I understand that some were misled by the Broncos uniforms, but that was Peyton Manning. Excuse me, Peyton frickin' Manning. All nits about defensive secondary are null and void because it was Peyton frickin' Manning. Belichick's going for that on 4th and 5 is excusable because he thought the worst case was an incomplete, not a 20-yard or so loss. If it was, say, Flacco, well, that nit is valid. However, if the punt pinned them on the 1-yard line, how long would it take Peyton frickin' Manning to get to his own 40? One play? Two plays? The call, as opposed to the execution, is a nit. As a nit, is null and void because it is Peyton freaking Manning. Now go back to listening about nits on the offense. And he says, P.S., in case I wasn't clear, the opposing quarterback was Peyton freaking Manning. Okay. Understood, William. And you know what? That's actually a good point. I opened up the program today by saying that that pretty much, with the exception of the color of the uniform, that pretty much looked like the old number 18 that we saw out there in Indy Colt blue and white, didn't it? You can see his arm strength is just about all back if it's not back already. And he's just still got a few timing and get-to-know-you type of things he's got to work out with the receiving corps. But, man, I tell you what, Denver's they could be very deadly before the end of this year. I will look forward to both Denver-San Diego games. Those two games will decide that division. Don't be surprised if Denver not only wins the West, but if you don't see Denver back here sometime in January. It could happen. It could definitely happen. I was very impressed. By the way, Demaryius Thomas, dude can play. Is there ever any doubt? Dude can play. How about the one-handed grab that he had right in front of the Patriots bench? Holy crap. That was a hell of a catch. Wow. Dude can play. That's all I'm going to tell you. Dude perfect, right? Here's one from VIP Strippers. He says the fourth and five play call instead of a punt. That's his nitpick. And I think that's what William was just kind of talking about. But I have to admit, William, with all due respect, that was a big nitpick of mine, too. I realize it was Peyton freaking Manning at the quarterback, but I do believe that even though it was like, what was it, the 34? Is that where we had the ball? Like the 34, 35-yard line?
Pretty, the fourth down
on
was
the fourth
the
37. 37, okay. So it was a little further away. You're talking about right there, you're talking about a 54, 55-yard field goal attempt. I don't think they felt too good about that at that stage of the game. You're kind of setting Gostkowski up, you know, for disaster on that one, even though I think he's capable of making it there, but he struggled from outside of 40 yards this year, as we've seen.
The conditions were also a little bit wet,
yeah,
a little breezy.
A little breezy.
The open end of the stadium.
Yeah. You're kicking toward the end that, kind of like Heinz Field in Pittsburgh, you're not really sure which way the ball's going to go or can go. I'd feel much better about kicking it the other way, but ironically, that's the end of the field that Gostkowski missed his field goal on against Arizona, and that's the one that Cundiff missed last year against the Patriots for Baltimore. It was on the other end of the field. Nevertheless, I digress. I think what it would have been appropriate there, if you really didn't think you were going for the first down, is take a 5-yard penalty for delay of game, back it up to the 42-yard line, and then let Zoltan Mesko try to coffin corner it. I mean, that's really kind of going with the odds, isn't it? I mean, if you realize that Peyton freaking Manning, William, is going to, you know, get down the field in a hurry, well, okay, fine. But you still at least give your defense a heck of a lot of room behind you to play with. And you're going to force Manning to use more time off of the clock. So I'd have to say that, yeah, fourth and five, that has to be a significant nitpick overall in terms of just a bad, not well thought out decision. Especially since it ended up being a 20-yard loss and you turn the ball over on downs and you give them outstanding field position. I mean, okay. Stripper says, by the way, second nitpick was ESPN Game Day will be at Stanford at Notre Dame instead of the Red River Rivalry. No doubt. No doubt, Strippers. But you know what? If Kansas State had not beaten Oklahoma, if Oklahoma had beaten KSU and Texas had beaten West Virginia, and both of those teams were undefeated and probably ranked in the top five or six nationally, which is where they would both be had they both won their respective games, my guess is that Game Day would have been at the State Fair of Texas for Texas OU instead of Stanford Notre Dame. See, now that Notre Dame is undefeated and Notre Dame's having a decent year. Notre Dame's defense is pretty good. I'm still not sold on their offense, but the defense is playing real well right now. But now everybody's saying, oh, return to glory. Woo-hoo. Dun, 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 dun. You know, come on. They need to beat somebody first. Beating Stanford would be a step in the right direction. Stanford had a hell of an overtime game win over Rich Rod's Arizona team this last weekend. So if Notre Dame, and again, Notre Dame's playing it at home. The Big Ten's watered down. Who's Notre Dame beaten? Who have they beaten? They beat the crap out of a mediocre Miami team, too. Who have they beaten? But everybody's saying that Notre Dame's back. Notre Dame's relevant again because they're 5-0. Big whoop. Let's see them beat somebody. Let's see Notre Dame matched up with, oh, here you go. Let's see Notre Dame matched up with West Virginia in, like, the Fiesta Bowl. You want to see that one? West Virginia will kick the holy you-know-what out of Notre Dame. You heard it here first. That won't even be close. That'll be like the 70-33 spanking that West Virginia put on Clemson in the Orange Bowl last year. So all I'm saying is that Strippers, Texas and OU have nobody to blame but themselves on that one. Okay, this one comes from Rodrigo in Brazil. How are you, Rodrigo? He says, good afternoon. I just wanted to pose a quick question here. Why haven't Belichick and the coaching staff been more criticized by the sad state of affairs in our secondary? Play on the field has obviously been less than stellar, but it's been this way since 07. And it appears as if it doesn't matter who we have back there, teams have abused us throwing the ball week in and week out. That can only lead to conclusions. Either we're drafting talented players and the coaching staff can't get the most out of them, or Bill is absolutely clueless in identifying the qualities a young DB needs to succeed in this league. Since selecting Asante Samuel in the fourth round, which secondary player have we drafted that has been a consistent contributor for this team, apart, of course, from Pro Bowler Brandon Merriweather? Actually, every defensive back we have drafted in the first couple of rounds seems to have regressed with each passing season. Darius Butler, good stretch in the end of 09, only to fall apart completely in 10. Chung had flashed some potential his first couple of seasons, now seems to be late in giving support up top on nearly every play. Can't argue that one. McCourty went from all-pro to jag in a span of 8 months. Hell, this can even be traced back to Eugene Wilson, who made a ton of plays in his first 2 years and then slowly became irrelevant. Are these guys all mediocre players, of whom the coaching staff is getting the most of? Or do they have talent and have gotten progressively worse as they shied away from playing instinctively and tried to incorporate Bill's philosophy into their game? I'll be eternally grateful for what Belichick has done for this franchise, but he shouldn't be immune to criticism. And this team's deficiencies in the secondary should, at least to some degree, be attributed to him either way you look at it. Okay, Rodrigo, you bring up some great points. I think you probably are saying some things that a lot of fans would agree with you about. Fact remains is that the secondary has underperformed. You bring up some legitimate points. Some of these guys seem to have regressed. I would tell you that I think it's a combination of several things. I don't think it's any one particular item. Number one, they're not drafting the players that they thought they were getting. And by that I mean they're going after what they feel is value or a bargain for the particular time they're taking them, and these guys are not turning out to have value. Rozai Dowling's a perfect example. He can't stay healthy enough to get on the field. It's been that way with a couple of other defensive backs that they've brought in. I think that their talent evaluation in terms of the defensive backfield has certainly been hit or miss, although I'll tell you that I think that Tavon Wilson certainly appears to be a hit. Now, again, I'm not gonna crown him yet. He's only five games into his career. But he seems to be doing the right things. Again, we said the same thing of Devin McCourty, and he ended up being a Pro Bowler his first year, and now he seems to have regressed somewhat. And I think a lot of the regression that we're seeing leads to a couple of things. Number one, teams are going over the top and taking shots down the field because the Patriots have largely played pretty tight coverage in the past, before, say, last year. Number two, the Patriots have not had as good a pass rush over the last couple of years as they had previous to this. And because they haven't had a pass rush, then you're forcing your defensive backs to do more work in the backfield against some very talented receivers. Number three, because the fact that teams are attacking the Patriots with the intermediate to deep ball, you've seen the secondary give them more cushion than what we would like. And they have not really yet adjusted out of that. They continue to play with that cushion, and I know it drives me crazy. I'm sure it drives many of you crazy when you see a lot of underneath balls, underneath routes thrown, and cornerback is late to the play, or the safety is late in providing support. So I think that does come from philosophy. And because they were playing tight, almost too tight, for the talent of some of the receivers that are in the game today, it's like, all right, what we need to do then is back off of these guys a little bit more and allow them some cushion and hope that our front four can help us make up the difference. Well, as we've seen over the last year or two, the front four has not yet done that job. Now, they're a little better this year, which is why I think we've seen the corners play a little better, conversely. But why the safeties are having some of the problems that they're having this year, I have yet really to put my finger on. I mentioned this in the opening hour of the show today, and I'll mention it again here, but I really want to watch the safeties more over the next couple of weeks. And let's, again, this is one of those things I think we need to revisit it during the bye week or certainly at the halfway point, because then I think you pretty much know what kind of team we're going to have here. And I want to see if they're able to adjust. I'm of the opinion right now that I think they're being told to do what they're doing. Now, you may or may not agree with that philosophy, But I don't think they've regressed in their talent. I think they're trying to play the way that the defense, like, you know, Matt Patricia and Bill Belichick, I think they're playing the way that, or they're trying to play the way that they're being told to play. And they're not getting the results. So that's why I say I think we want to see a few more weeks out of this to see how they now readjust. Or let's see if there's any readjustment at all. They may try to stay the course here and continue doing what they're doing in hopes that something will click. I still would love to see, I'd still love to see a blitz. I realize you can't really do that to Peyton Manning, but I think let's give these guys a chance to get fired up here. You know, let's send one of those DBs, let's send a corner, let's send a safety, let's send somebody, a linebacker, anybody. Let's get somebody in there. Let's hammer the quarterback and give those guys in the back seven something to get fired up about. And I really believe that if we put some pressure, if this team puts pressure on the quarterback, you'll see continued improvement from the back seven. That's really about all I can give you at this stage. I think the corners are improving slowly. I think the safeties are lacking somewhat. And like I said, I want a little further review on the play of the safeties to see if I can glean whether or not this is something that's fundamentally being told to them to do as opposed to actual regression of their talents. I refuse to believe that right now because, A, I think we all know what we have with Patrick Chung. B, I see a pretty good player in Tavon Wilson. You know, so say what you want to about missing on guys like Dowling. I think they hit one on Tavon Wilson. So it's a give and take. But it's a very good, thought-provoking email, Rodrigo, and I appreciate your sending it. Sean in Vancouver, British Columbia, says, John, McCourty needs to be aware of when the ball is in the air and then turn around. He had good coverage on the pass interference play as well as the touchdown. If he can be just a bit more focused, his game would be much improved. Focused, I don't know if that's the right word, Sean. He did have good coverage in the pass interference play. He did not turn around. He made contact as the receiver was going up for the ball. That's why pass interference. The trouble with playing that kind of a play is that, you know, you want the defensive back to turn around, but when you turn around, you don't always know the ball's coming your way. And if the ball's not coming your way, then any good receiver is going to break the route and get open once you commit to turning to the ball. And if the ball's not coming your way, guess what? It will now. So that's damned if you do, damned if you don't. As far as, you know, I mean, these defensive backs, and I think most defensive backs, and I know the Patriots do it this way, these defensive backs are coached to play the hands. They're basically coached to not watch the ball. Now, I don't know if you agree or disagree with that. Quite frankly, you know, I think that's just the nature of the position. It's a tough position to play. It's a thankless position to play, playing cornerback. Hardest position on the field, without a doubt in my mind. Just because of the athleticism of the receivers that you have to go up against, who, by the way, are not only probably faster, but they're also bigger, more physical, taller. It's a physical mismatch in most instances. And yet we're asking these cornerbacks to do some things that, frankly, physically, they can't do. Biologically, can't do. The players then are told to watch a receiver's hands. They're supposed to watch the hands. And that if the receiver's hands move up, you are to move up with him. Okay? That's really basically what goes on. If the receiver grabs the ball and you're not there in time, you are instructed, or these guys are being told, go for the hands. Hit the hands. Sometimes the timing of it doesn't work out, and I think that's largely what happened in McCourty's case. I actually think he did have good coverage, as you pointed out, Sean. But the problem is, he made contact with the receiver before the ball got there. That is interference. So we're saying, okay, we'll turn around to the ball. Well, you turn around to the ball, you don't know, unless you got eyes in the back of your head, you don't know the ball's coming your way. So if the ball's not coming your way, the receiver breaks the route, and you are toasted for, you know, a 80-yard bomb score. You might get lucky and turn around on the ball, and if you do, the receiver, if he's a smart guy, guess what he's going to do? He's going to pull up on his route, and what are you going to do? You're going to hammer him. Now, contact is allowed according to the rules if the receiver, if the defensive back is turning back and going for the ball. Contact's allowed. But I gotta admit to you, sometimes that's judgment. So you can begin to see the difficult time that a cornerback really has in these particular instances. You sometimes just have to be lucky. I don't think it has anything to do with focus. I think he is completely focused, Sean. I think you've just got to be, you've got to have athletes back there that can stay athletically with the receivers they're guarding. It's that simple. It's kind of like basketball, you know, when you play man-to-man defense. You got to be quick enough and got to have, you know, side-to-side lateral movement enough in order to stay in front of a guy who's driving to the hole. That's what a cornerback has to have. I don't care so much about size. I mean, it's all great to say that, we got a 6'1", 6'2 corner. Great. Can he move? Can he move laterally? Does he have speed? Frankly, I don't, this is why it's never made sense to me, but there should be more Troy Browns in this game. Because Troy was a receiver. He had quicks. He had hands. Stands to reason that he'd be a hell of a defensive back. And guess what? He was when he was in there. Why don't we see more teams do this? Why don't we see more teams develop good cover corners from receivers that can't crack their rotation? I don't understand that. I think there should be players like that. You need athletes to cover the athletes. And I just don't think sometimes teams' cornerbacks are as athletically cut out to go up and do the things that, you know, you see guys like Megatron do in Detroit. It's a mismatch. It's like somebody 6'4" jumping center against a 7-footer in basketball. It's a mismatch. Ain't happening. On a positive note, Sean says, I want to point out that Dennard looks good and should get more playing time. I agree 100%. He did look good in spots. I think that's a real bonus if you can get, some rotation in there and get him in there playing. And he looks to be one of those guys that athletically can stay. I think that's a huge, huge bonus, especially when it comes to nickel packages and the like. Sean says, I went to my first game at Gillette Stadium this weekend. I live in Maryland. I went to the Skins game last year. But I've got to say Gillette is 10 times better in person than on TV. I was amazed how clean it is, and after hearing all you guys say how quiet it is, I felt like we were decently loud on Sunday. I've yet to rewatch the game on TV, but I'm anxious to see how loud we were. What do you guys think? Kevin, what do you think? Were we loud enough?
Yeah, no, I thought it was an above-average crowd.
That was pretty good.
I thought opening week was good, too.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. There was some criticism here on the show last week about the crowd noise, and I tried to explain how, the stadium structure really doesn't allow for a lot of what we do to be kept internally to let it reverberate.
Then there was also the matter of, when it's 31-7, it's probably natural for people not to be going completely wild. Yeah. But then once things tightened up again, I thought the crowd picked it back up.
Yeah, I thought so too. I will tell you this, though, that it never ceases to amaze me, but, club sections, I mean, they are never full for the second half kickoff, ever, ever. They're about half full. And I just, those people, I'm sorry, I realize you pay a lot of money for those, and so you're probably entitled to every perk that you get. I go into the club section after the game is over for post-game interviews. And so whoever they bring up for a post-game interview with the season ticket holders that are in there, I'm doing an interview live with a player or a coach or whoever, happens to come up from the locker room. And so I understand that, they're paying a premium for these little perks, but, there's no excuse to be back in your seat on your butt or at least standing, but at least on your butt in your seat for the second half kickoff. It is, after all, a game. And I do think over the, 11 years now that we've got Gillette Stadium in existence, that that we have had a lot of fans who have become complacent because of those club seats. There's no doubt in my mind. But it's the price of doing business. They had to have it. The stadium had to be built. You have to have the suites and the club seats and all that stuff. And, it's up to the rank and file to be loud, be as noisy as possible, be as active as possible. But I thought it was better this week. I definitely thought it was better. John says, John, I thought overall the game was played really well, not by only both teams, but by both offenses and defenses. I love the D coming up with those big plays when we needed them. Here's my nitpick. I've been noticing, and none more than this weekend, that the O-line starts to falter in the fourth quarter. At a time when they really need to dig in and finish, they seem to relax and let Tom get run over. He says, well, everyone is screaming about the 4th-and-5 call. My outlook is that with the rapid pace the Pats' offense was running, the Broncos would never have been ready for that move. But Ryan Wendell was the one who wasn't ready. Our own O-line let them through so fast, Tom didn't have time to cock his arm back for a throw. They targeted Wendell. It was obvious. Every time I saw Tom getting hit or sacked, it was Wendell standing around looking lost. We need to finish the game and not rest when we have a comfortable lead, especially against a Peyton Manning-led team. Interesting observation, John. I cannot say that you're incorrect. Wendell did get beat a couple of times. Honestly, I had to look at the 4th-and-5 again. It might have been Wendell on that play. Fact of the matter is, though, is that if you do probably what you should have done and played the odds on that one, Wendell getting whipped on a play would never have happened. Because you probably should have taken a 5-yard penalty, backed it up, and then let Mesko try to, you know, pin him. That's probably what you should have done in that case. But I do agree with you about the whole finish the game aspect. No doubt in my mind. You got to finish the game, and you can't rest when you have a 31-7 lead against Peyton Manning. You just can't do it. I think that they proved that, and I think that given the opportunity for these two teams to meet again in the postseason, if it happens, if the Patriots are fortunate, and they will not be facing the same Bronco team that they faced in Week 5, and I think we all realize that now, and I'm sure we'll say that again in January if we're lucky enough to be there, you're not going to face the same team. But if they got in the same situation, yeah, you got to learn. You got to learn to step on the jugular. And really, no matter who it is, certainly against a Manning team, because you know they can come back, but you got to put a team down. You got to put them out of their misery. You got to put the bullet in their head, so to speak, before you ever let them get up again. And they're still struggling with learning how to finish the game. I don't know that they will be able to learn that. That's something that obviously time is going to tell if they can learn how to finish. All right, let's squeeze in another timeout here. Still got Facebook posts to get to, so if you want to do that, John.Rook on Facebook. Emails we can get to, webradio@patriots.com on your nitpicks. What are your thoughts on Kevin Faulk? I've got nobody that wants to comment on Kevin Faulk at all, and he retired today. Nobody? Nobody with a memory? Nobody? He meant nothing to you? You're better than that. Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. In the Patriots playbook.
Verizon Fios is America's fastest internet. How fast is that? Faster than Patriots linebacker Jerod Mayo can take down a quarterback, a running back, tight end, or an offensive lineman who just got in the way. In fact, Verizon Fios internet is more than twice as fast as anything you've ever seen. And that means Patriots scores, videos, highlights, and more right when you want them. Fios is built to support multiple devices simultaneously with a constant stream of your favorite Patriots content. And that means you get Jerod Mayo's sacks at Jerod Mayo's speed.
Now that's fast.
Welcome to a world of football where and when you want it. Welcome to Life on Fios, proud sponsor of the New England Patriots. Fios available in select areas. Internet speeds up to 300 down and 65 up megabits per second available.
What would make your life better? Start with better banking from Sovereign Bank. More than a checking account, better banking is a package of financial solutions with preferred rates, debit card cash rewards, and online banking with bill pay, along with the flexible options you need to help make your everyday a little easier to manage. And now Sovereign is part of Santander, one of the strongest, safest, and most successful banks in the world. That's what we call better banking. Sovereign Bank, member FDIC.
My name name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then, I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the red zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call Star NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics and Bruins tickets to all games, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
Pats fans, here's your chance to experience the ultimate road trip. Enter the Patriots Ultimate Road Trip Raffle for a chance to travel in style with the Patriots to an away game. The grand prize includes seats on the team plane, a room in the team hotel, a pair of tickets to the game, access to the field on game day, and much more. Proceeds from the raffle will benefit the Patriots Charitable Foundation. Buy your Patriots Ultimate Road Trip Raffle tickets today by logging on to www.patriots.com.
Sullivan Tire and Auto Repair is teaming up with Bridgestone Tires for an offer that's going to make you and your family very excited. Now through September 30th, when you buy four select Bridgestone Tires at Sullivan Tire, you could receive a $70 American Express gift card or your very own Wii gaming system the whole family will love. See SullivanTire.com. Offer valid August 27th through September 30th, 2012. Mail-in claim form required. Cards issued by American Express Prepaid Card Management Corporation. Wii systems given away on behalf of Bridgestone America. Nintendo is not affiliated with this promotion. Certain limitations apply.
Hey, it's Rob Gronkowski, Pats tight end and big-time Duncan fan. The secret to my success? Coach drew up a play called Gronk, run downfield, catch ball out of air, and we give you freshly made bakery sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. I say Coach is a genius.
No defense keeps Gronk from his freshly made bakery sandwiches. Hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab your go-to sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots, LLC.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Have a nitpick about this week's game?
Yeah, I was at the game.
Well, John does too.
Sucky, sucky, sucky.
It's Nitpick Tuesday on Patriots Playbook with John Rook on Patriots.com Radio.
Love that. It is Nitpick Tuesday. Web radio at Patriots.com. 508-298-0398 on the Ace Ticket Hotline. John.Rook on Facebook, at JRook0722 on Twitter. We're very socially media friendly, so do it! A couple of items here. Patriots, number one in the league in points scored, 33 points per game. They were also number one in the league last week as well. Lead the league in total offense as well. And they lead the NFL in turnover differential. They're plus 10 over their opponents. They have 14 takeaways and 4 giveaways, even though they coughed it up this last week. Still got a plus 10, which has them tied, I believe, for the league lead. They're actually second in the league in takeaways with the 14. So the defense is doing a pretty good job of turning the ball over and getting the offense opportunity, wouldn't you say? But that's where they are at the top of the league in terms of statistics for this week, and we'll continue updating that as we move along here. But I wanted to just give you just a brief update. A lot of that stuff you can certainly find out yourself in your favorite websites, but just in case you hadn't had a chance to glance at it, you know, the Patriots are moving the ball. They're scoring with the ball. And the defense has helped tremendously because the defense is turning the ball over and getting it back for the offense and giving the offense more chances to score with said ball. That's what it's all about. So we can continue to be critical and continue to nitpick as we're doing with the secondary, especially here defensively. But the bottom line is that at least they're doing enough to put the team in position to win. And that's what you can ask for. You can ask for, hopefully, continued, slow, steady improvement throughout the course of the year, because that's really what you're looking for. But they are making plays, and we had a caller in the opening hour also suggest this, that, you know, hey, at least the team is, they've got guys that are stepping up and making the big stop, making the big play. And for the most part, you're right, they are. They're learning how to develop playmakers, and that's what you need. You need playmakers on defense. Chandler Jones is one. It seems like he's got at least one huge disruptive play every game, and he had one in a batted down pass. I believe it was in the first half against Peyton Manning, where the receiver was wide stinking open. Would have been a touchdown. So all I'm saying is that you got to have guys that make plays, and it looks like at the very least, those are being developed. Michael says on Facebook, Nitpick Tuesday, the defense let down its guard in the fourth quarter, and like I predicted on Thursday, there was a nail-biter aspect of the game. This team needs to keep the throttle down no matter how much the offense dominates. As for going for it on fourth down, I don't object to going for it, though I do question the play that was called in the protection scheme. Maybe it was execution. It was definitely execution, Michael. I'm not sure we really know who the Ravens are. They barely beat the Chiefs. They lost to the Eagles. We may meet them again, but when we do, we will be a more developed team, and we should be able to hold the lead. As for the Niners, they can be beaten if our run defense improves. I don't think Alex Smith can make the throws that Eli has made. As for the Texans, we just flat out need to stop J.J. Watt. I would not argue with that one. J.J. Watt is a one-man wrecking crew, isn't he? That's the one guy on the Houston Texans I would love to have. A bunch of guys that you're kind of like, yeah, they're okay, okay. Pretty solid. Yeah, all right. J.J. Watt's the guy's like, man, that guy is disruptive. Okay, Tim says on Facebook, nitpicks, Ridley fumble. Not sure I like how he turns and falls onto his back as he's going down. It makes it much easier to rip at the ball. I said that, Tim. McCourty, learn to turn and look for the ball. Drives me crazy how he has great coverage, but because he doesn't look back for the ball, he gives up the play. Well, as I explained earlier, Tim, these guys really are not coached up to do that. They're coached to stay with the receiver by watching the receiver's hands. They're playing the guy's hands. They feel like you've got a better percentage of making a play on the receiver if you play his hands rather than turning back for the ball. If the ball's not coming to you, as I explained earlier, and you turn back for the ball, you're dead, okay? And you're going to get burnt. Like Elvis Toast Patterson, you're going to get burnt. And they just decided that this is, you know, they feel like they have corners that can play this technique in the backfield. That's how they're coaching it. Third down defense, another game where we gave up over 50% conversion on third down. I'd still rather see the defense face third and three than third and 14. Finally, that GD foghorn on third down. That thing was almost as annoying as the chirping whistle the Jets have. Let's not stoop to their level. That's just for you, Tim. All I can tell you is that came from above, my friend. Huge positive. The offensive game plan was fantastic. That caffeinated no huddle worked like a dream. Sure did. Kevin Faulk, great Patriot who sadly is almost unknown in the rest of the country. Favorite Faulk moment, every time he was tackled, he would pat the tackler on the back of his head. The ultimate sportsman and the epitome of class, the NFL needs more like him. That's a great point, Tim. He did do that a lot, didn't he? He always patted the other guy who brought him down. That's good stuff. All right. At least we got one Kevin Faulk remembrance here. John says, John, I'm usually in the club seats. It's accurate that we are usually a few minutes late getting out for the second half. What usually makes us late is, A, the lines for the bathroom, food, drinks, etc., pretty long in the clubhouse. And B, there are TVs every 6 feet, so we never have to hurry back out there. It's also a great time for people to catch up on all the scores around the league. Not saying it's right that we're getting out there late, just offering up reasons why. Okay? You know what, John? That's pretty good. That's good an explanation as any, and I appreciate your saying that. You're right. You are absolutely right about the TVs being every 6 feet, so there's really no incentive to get back out there. And the Patriots have nobody to blame but themselves for that. But that's what you do in a club seat, in a clubhouse environment. You have to provide the amenities that, you know, the rest of the peons out in the public can't get to. That's why you pay a premium for the seat. I get it. It would be nice, and I get the long lines for the bathroom. Believe me, there should be more bathrooms. There really should be. I've been up in those clubhouses, and I see it myself. There should be. I don't know why they're not. There should be half a dozen at least up there. There's not. A couple on each side. So I get that. Food, drinks, I get all of that stuff. That's very true. You can't really get out into the stands and get your libations or your food with the commoners because you're kind of restricted to the club. So you're kind of hamstrung where that's concerned. It's all right. I would just say go early. You know, you just made a statement that, you know, well, there's, you know, TVs every 6 feet. Well, then go before the rush gets there at halftime. Right? You're not going to miss anything because there's TVs in there. I'm just saying. That's all. Just saying. I'm nitpicking you, John. I appreciate your answer on that one. Joshua says on Facebook, John, I do not have a single memory of Mr. Faulk because when his name gets brought up, all I can remember is the numerous amount of times when the Patriots had their backs up against the wall or on a key third down, Brady would drop back and simply pitch or throw it to number 33. He'd make a 2 or 3 yard gain into a Patriots first down. He's the definition of a true Patriot because he always played every down like it was his last and always played with heart. The way he would turn a 5-yard run into a 10 or 15 yard gain was simply amazing. Sure going to miss him, as we all are. That's very well put. Very well said, Joshua. Thank you. Chris also puts this up on Facebook. He says, we're talking about teams that we've seen that we think we know who they are. He says, I think the Giants have proven that our estimates of the best team are quite fallible, even in week 17. Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. Probably right about that. All right, what else do we have here? Here's one from Barry who says, Kevin Faulk's direct snap 2-point conversion in the Super Bowl, but also running on other occasions. Successful every time, if I recall correctly. Yes. That, you know, every time with the exception of the infamous 4th-and-2 at Indy, right? Well, that wasn't really a run, but and it wasn't really his fault, but okay. He did talk about that, I think, earlier today after the retirement ceremony, and he said, you know, kind of tried to provide some insight, and it basically was just defensed well. It's, you know, sometimes the defense gets you, and that's just kind of what happens, and there's really not much else sometimes you can do about it. Here we go. Chad says, my nitpicks for Tuesday would be the last drive of the second half when the Patriots marched 98 yards to the Broncos' goal line and only came up with 3 points. That really bummed me. You can't finish the drive with a field goal, not when you're that close to the end zone. It's a good one. It's a good one. It's touchdown or touchdown. There aren't any other alternatives. Also, the 4th-and-long, a horrible call. Yes, as we have said many times today. But I also have a nitpick for the Broncos. I don't want to sound too biased or sectarian, but the Broncos played the shotgun the entire game. That's pathetic, cheap, and lame. It's an embarrassment to play the shotgun nearly 65 times. It's poor sport, not fair play. You're ruining the game. It got me mad. It just proves how bad and poor mentality John Fox is. Well, you know what, Chad? Okay, that may very well be, but that's the way they thought they could beat the Patriots. So, you know what? You got to defend it. Defend it. It's kind of like people picking on West Virginia right now, you know, in college football because they're running up the score. I mean, they've scored 118 points the last 2 weeks. Good God almighty. That isn't football. That's Xbox. But I remember saying the same thing about the David Klingler and Andre Ware Houston teams, the late 80s and early 90s. Then they were, you know, putting up half a hundred every week routinely and throwing for ungodly, you know, amounts of yardage because of the system. And the answer to that is, well, stop them. Figure out a way to stop them. So I don't really have a problem with that. Barry says, John, I wanted to see if you could mention the fan parties we're going to have in Seattle this weekend. Patriots tailgate for Pats fans going to road games, and the Boston Sports Fan Group of Seattle invite you to join us for our biggest weekend of the season. All right, so if you're headed for Seattle or you're in the area and you're planning on going to the game, pay attention. Here we go. Saturday night party, 6 to 9 p.m. at Spitfire on 2219 4th Avenue between Bell and Blanchard. This will be a casual get-together for fans to meet, catch up before the excitement of game day. We have some special guests from the Boston media joining us. Wear your Pats gear. We'll be taking pictures and video. Happy hour goes to 6:30, 21 and over only for this event. Okay. And then Sunday morning pregame party at Showbox Sodo. S-O-D-O, Sodo, I guess. I don't know. 1700 First Avenue, South Seattle. That's from 9 a.m. to 12:30 with special guest Patriots Hall of Famer Sam Bam Cunningham, who will be available for pictures and autographs. There will be a breakfast buffet for $12 as well as a full bar. Under 21 are welcome, but will only be allowed in a limited area. It's just a short walk to CenturyLink Field from this location. $10 donation per person will be collected at the door to support the Jimmy Fund as well as other net proceeds from the weekend's events. Very good. Barry, thanks for passing that on. And if you want to, Barry, post that information to my Facebook page. I think you are also a Facebook friend. And that way, if someone's like, hey, I didn't get that info, then you can go to my Facebook page and it will be posted there for everybody to see. So there you go. Let's see. Now we have. Okay, let's hold on to that one for the fantasy guys. Peter, Toronto, great game, John. Was a little worried, but my nitpick is why Devin McCourty never looks back when trying to make a play. It would help him make a stop on a play and not get pass interference penalties. We've mentioned this, Peter. We may have already answered it while you were listening, but just in case you haven't, he's basically, I mean, I don't think that he would never turn back. I think if he felt like the ball was definitely coming down his way, that you'd probably see McCourty turn and look back, because quite frankly, I think he has done that in the past. The problem with that is that basically these guys are not really coached to do that. They're coached, when the receiver gets a half a step on them, they're coached to watch the receiver's hands. They're going to watch the hands of the guy, okay? The hands begin to make a move, he makes a move. Ball gets in the receiver's hands, he tries to strip the ball away. It's that simple. It's a calculated risk, but it's less of a risk by way of the thinking of the Patriots coaching staff. It's less of a risk guarding the hands than turning around and risk getting beat over the top deep, because the receiver can make a simple adjustment, especially if the ball is not coming your way. If you turn back to look for the ball, the receiver makes a simple adjustment. Guess what? Ball's coming your way! So, you know, it is what it is. These guys generally are not coached to turn to look back. You can be critical of that if you like. I'm just telling you that's the way it is. It's frustrating for a lot of people. It's a nitpick for a lot of folks. But that's what they're coached to do. Dave in Monterey says, my favorite Kevin Falk memory was when he caught that dump pass over the middle for a first down against, well, everybody. See, now that's good. I like that, because it always seemed like Kevin Falk, in every game that he played, and this is what I'm going to take away from Kevin myself. Specific memory? Not really. But I would say two-point conversion in the Super Bowl is a good one. But here's the thing. Kevin always came up with a big play when you needed it. He was the safety valve. He was the guy you could rely on. He was the guy that we abused and re-abused over and over again. Guy that really sometimes never got his due because he was just a little undersized as a running back, but damn, every time he was in there, he made a play. He was one of those quote-unquote playmakers that you have to have for a team to be successful. That's the best thing you can say about Kevin Falk. He just made, guy made plays. Dude made plays. Dave says, a little story for you all. Last week I was playing wide receiver in a flag football game. I was being covered by a shorter, quicker, stronger DB. Toward the end of the game, I ran a fade route, dropped my hips, stared at the sky while raising my hands. The DB stopped, turned to look for the ball. Ball wasn't coming. As soon as he turned, I cut inside where the quarterback saw me open and hit me for an easy touchdown. Now, I'm 5'11", 35 years old, and not 6'2", and 25-year-old speedster. I'm not that big on McCourty either, but I feel that he has the most upside for now. Attaboy, Dave. See? It's exactly what I'm telling you here. It's exactly what I'm telling you. Outstanding. Rock it! In Jim Rome style, right? That's a good one. That's a good one. That's all you got to do. If you deke the DB, you stop and, okay, that's fine. So, and sometimes the defensive back, if he's not going to turn back with the ball, he's going to hammer you. And what's going to get called? Pass interference. So, again, as I've explained, this is how they feel is the gives you the best chance to defend an obviously superior athlete at wide receiver. You just need better athletes. I said this in the opening part of the program in terms of the nitpicks. You need better athletes at the corner. Why don't you turn around some receivers? Because they know what receivers do. That's why Troy was so effective when he had to sub over and play defensive back late in his career.
Bingo!
Thank you. He says, my nitpick is on the Pats fans. The Pats are looking good. Not perfect, but who is right now? There's a lot of upside to this team. I know you're running short on time, so I'll explain more next time. Dave, that's an excellent email. You are spot on, my friend. Spot on. I think I've got one more here. Hang on. Let me see if I can. Yes. This one comes from Lyndon. Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. I got it. Mary Beth sends this one. Memory of Falk every third down. That's pretty appropriate. That's exactly what the guy meant. He was there on every play, every big play you needed. When you needed, you know, a yard, he'd get two. When you needed 5 yards, he'd get six or seven. You needed 10 yards, he'd get 10 or 12. Seemed like it almost every time. Yep. Every time. So there you go. All right. At any rate, tomorrow here on the program, we'll certainly get to the business of turning the page toward the Seattle Seahawks. It's a team that, you know, we're going to continue to try to learn a little bit more about over the course of this week, just because they occupy residency in the NFC West as the Patriots play NFC West division teams this year. So Seattle has pretty good, statistically speaking, defense. They may be limited somewhat offensively, but they've got a rookie quarterback in Russell Wilson, who a lot of people weren't very high on coming out of college, NC State and Wisconsin, and yet he earned himself a starting job for Pete Carroll's Seahawks. So we'll talk about Russell Wilson. Eric Scalavina will certainly be here in the opening hour of the program. We'll talk with some members of the Seahawks media as well. At least we're hopeful of doing that with the time difference this week. That is a little bit of a challenge for us schedule-wise. But we'll certainly dissect and analyze, I think, taking a look at what kind of problems and what kind of opportunities the Patriots will have against the Seahawks coming up this next Sunday afternoon. Stick around here on Patriots.com radio, because up next, fantasy football champs Bill and Todd will get you connected. Same Pat's time, same Pat's channel manana, kids. I believe I've waited long enough. Where do I begin? Learning to talk again. Can't you see I've waited long enough? Where do I begin?
Tuesday through Thursday. Hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.